Welcome to the Eurovision Yearbook. This is a series where we take a look at the glory days of the Eurovision Song Contest and look back at the fond memories of a Eurovision artist. This week, we are flipping the pages of the 1988 Eurovision Song Contest and exploring the life of La Decada, the band which represented Spain in Dublin. This is ESC 101. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to ESC 101, your home of Eurovision history and obscurity. This is the podcast where we take a look at the Eurovision Song Contest throughout the years to uncover the story behind the world's largest international televised music competition. Welcome to episode 22. My name is Alexander. This is the very first band that we're looking at, and I won't be going through the biographical details of every single member, mostly because I couldn't find any. I tried looking through the Spanish Wikipedia article, and some basic searching just didn't reveal anything as detailed as other previous Eurovision Yearbook episodes. Sometimes doing historical research is just super frustrating, as there's little to no information available, or sometimes there's too much information, and I end up missing something entirely. In this case, researching was just all over the place. Some members have only scraps of information, while others had a little bit more background to them. Compared to the Monolith episodes I just did with the Eurovision Travel Guide and the Mates in Space collaboration, check those out if you haven't already done so, I'm happy to offer this week's episode as a lighter one to balance out against some of the heavier ones we did. So if you enjoy lighter episodes, then this is definitely the episode for you. But for those of you who enjoy a little bit more in depth, there's still some good info that I managed to find, so I hope you stick around and enjoy this week's episode. I will leave a link to all of the sources that I used in today's episode on the show notes page on our website so you can read the sources for yourself, although I will warn you, a majority of them are in Spanish, so you might have to get your Google translators out to understand what they're saying. To kick off this episode, I'm going to go through the six band members that performed on the Eurovision stage, as well as the conductor and a little bit of the member that had to sit out. And then I'll talk about the history of the band as a whole. So here are the members of La Decada in no particular order. First up is Carmelo Martinez, and unfortunately the only information on Carmelo that I could find were news articles reporting his death in 2021, and none of the articles I looked through contained any significant biographical information. Most news articles that talk about someone that's died usually contain some kind of biographical information, like where the person was born, what their childhood was like, how they got into the career that they were in, all these sorts of things. Unfortunately, the articles that I could find just didn't have any of that information. According to the article I sourced, he was born around the year 1957. I basically had to do some math saying, oh, he died at such an age, and then just subtracted the years that he lived. So that's my best guess that he lived in 1957. He ended up joining the band from 1985 to 1989. He was noted as being a popular singer holding a solo career, most likely after his departure from the band. And in 2008, he attempted to represent Spain at Eurovision by forming the group El Guataque de la Decada, singing the song Canto a los Amigos. The selection system that year was really wild, involving 536 entries being voted on by MySpace users. That's right, MySpace, which, if you don't know what that is, it was the social media platform in the early 2000s, which apparently still exists today. Carmelo's group didn't end up getting enough votes to make it to the top five, and the committee which selected the other five entries didn't choose the band either. Why they didn't simply just do a top 10, I have no idea. Apart from those two links to the Eurovision Song Contest, I know nothing else about Carmelo other than he died in 2021 due to lung cancer, which he had been suffering with for about a year. Next up is Jose Subiza. He was born on July 15th, 1965 in Ceuta, Spain. Ceuta is actually one of the autonomous cities that is Spanish territory on the African continent. He ended up being part of the group from 1986 until 1989. And the only other information I could find on Jose is that he's listed on the Ralph's Talents website as an actor and has done work in directing and producing films. He has some pretty decent headshots, and I guess he's available for acting work. Next up is Cecilia Blanco. Cecilia is part of the band from 1985 until 1994 and continued to collaborate after she left. Her role in the group changed over the years as she gained experience, going from a singer and dancer to a composer, arranger, and a translator. When she left the group, she struggled to make a name for herself outside of the band. However, her perseverance paid off, and she worked to build her reputation. In 1998, she won an award at the John Lennon Songwriting Contest for Best Composition in the Latin Music category. She is active on social media and has worked with other former band members to create various musical projects. Next up is Ana Neri Fragoso. At the age of 13, she joined a contemporary ballet and ended up joining the band in 1986 as a dancer, leaving the group in 1989 to join a dance group instead. She is reported to have done work in TVE for music programs and lives in the United States. I did find some mentions of a dance teacher in New York with the same name born in Spain, but I have no way of confirming whether it's her or not, so I'm just going to leave that in the rumor pile and move on. Next up is Manolo Aguilar. My apologies for my terrible Spanish. Apparently, Manolo has his own blog, which is quite small and focuses mostly on his contemporary work with the music industry, particularly on intellectual property rights, copyright, music production, and recording sessions, with contemporary meaning the late 2000s to mid-2010s. He started his music career in 1969 with a rock band called Zas. At least I believe that's how it's pronounced. He played and composed for La Decada from 1985 until 1990, where he eventually found himself in the more technical and legal side of the music industry. The next band member that we're taking a look at is Manel Santisteban. Born in Madrid in 1956, he was influenced by his parents' love of jazz music, and his older brother, who was also a composer, became self-taught, studying piano and harmony, and Manel eventually moved on to formalizing his education. He initially focused on jazz, forming his first group, Casa Quemada Jazz, in 1975, where he won various jazz festivals. Various collaborations widened his portfolio, and in the 1980s, he gained an interest in synthesizers and MIDI, as you do in the 1980s, and slowly moved away from jazz into pop, working for a number of artists, including Julio Iglesias, who we'll be exploring in his own Eurovision Yearbook episode sometime in the future. As his work continued, he was approached by Javier de Juan and formed La Decada Prodigosa, or simply known as La Decada, at the Eurovision Song Contest. He performs their entry on the stage and goes on to perform the song for King Juan Carlos I. He continued to compose music into the 1990s and 2000s, winning awards along the way, and building his reputation as a solid musical composer in Spain. And that covers the six individuals that were on the Eurovision stage. However, there are still two more we have to cover. Javier de Juan was the conductor of the entry and also a founding member of the band. Javier was born in Alcoy Aliente, arriving in Madrid in 1968 with a group called Los Botines. He worked with various orchestras in the 1970s, and he also recorded several albums. His work shifted around, working with various individuals, including Julio Iglesias, who we mentioned earlier, as well as Azucar Moreno, one of my favorite Spanish Eurovision acts, which I'll be adding to the long list of names that I want to cover in the Eurovision Yearbook. In the 1980s, Javier found La Decada and remained with the group for several decades, serving as the conductor of the Eurovision entry due to the six-person limit for performers on the stage. The band does have a website. The current version of that website does not list Javier as being part of the band. However, the Wayback Machine has a snapshot of the website in October 2016, which does list him as the sole director of the band. And the Spanish Wikipedia article for the band lists Javier as leaving the band in 2018. So I'm going to assume that's the correct date, and that's when he left the band. The final person we're going to be taking a look at is Manolo Rodriguez, who unfortunately had to remain backstage due to the six-person limit. Manolo was born in 1954 in Seville and started his music career in the 1970s, joining various bands. In 1985, he founded the band with Javier and remained with the band until 1990. His name changed to Manuel Eman at some point, and I don't know why that's the case, but apparently that's what happened. He began his solo career in the 1990s, moving to California in 1995 and working on various projects. He eventually returned to Spain sometime after 2001. Now that we've gone through and learned a little bit about each of the band members at the Eurovision Song Contest, let's take a look at the band as a whole. The band's official name is La Decada Prodigiosa, at least I think that's how it's pronounced. At the Eurovision Song Contest, they're simply labeled as La Decada, and I'll be referring to them as such. The band was founded in 1985 by Javier, Manel, and Manuel as a project to produce medleys of Spanish songs from the 1960s. Several temporary singers came in and out of the band over the years, and their initial album was a huge hit. Owing to the success of the album, the band formalized its structure, moving from an experimental project to a proper band, adding the remaining members, which went on to represent Spain at Eurovision. The band was internally selected by the Spanish broadcaster in 1988, most likely gaining the attention of the broadcaster through the portfolios of its members and the success of its second album in 1986. Of course, the rules of the Eurovision Song Contest mandated that entries had to be original compositions. Check out episode 2 on the origins of that particular rule at the contest. The band ended up writing their very first original song. They created their Eurovision entry for 1988 entitled, and please bear with me with my Spanish, La Chica Que Yo Quiero, made in Spain, translated as The Girl That I Want, made in Spain. Interesting that the made in Spain part remained in English. Anyway, here is a clip of their 1988 entry. This entry ended up coming 11th with 58 points, getting points from 12 countries, and with the maximum point set being 8, I can see why. This entry lacked any cohesion whatsoever. The fashion alone has literally no coordination or thought put into it whatsoever. It feels so random, and it is 1988, which is fashion on fire, or in their case, fashion on fuego, which is a much better Eurovision entry compared to this. This band is a cover band at its core, and it definitely shows. The broadcaster saw their talent at reproducing other songs, but chose to ignore any thoughts into original songwriting and any talent in performing, which this contest is completely focused on. In all honesty, they need to stick to what they know, which is covering songs. There's nothing wrong with that. But their chemistry on stage is just non-existent, and given the amount of band member changes, it shows. I don't know what the broadcaster was thinking or whether they were thinking at all. Individually, I'm sure they are talented artists, performers, and musicians, but together in this entry, it's completely middle of the road. It's not atrocious in the standing like a statue sense, but it's not Céline Dion in a tutu. Lyrics to the song on the Diggaloo Thresh website don't reveal much substance to the song either, basically describing a beautiful woman made in Spain. I will admit Spain has beautiful women, but the way these lyrics are translated, it's as if these women are things you can buy at the store. Quote, "Who is she? Nobody knows. The girl that I love, I want a made in Spain. Made in Spain tattooed on her skin, 100,000 watts of sun shining on me every day. Made in Spain, special passport, she's made in Spain, the best guarantee." This sounds like a product you would buy off the shelf. High quality goods are made in Spain. I'm sure they just didn't mean it that way, but honestly, this entry is just forgettable for me, and I'm just gonna move on. After Eurovision, the band shuffled through members faster than a deck of cards, as they continued to produce music in the 1990s. Fascinatingly, the band members managed to record music for the Walt Disney Company in 1995, becoming the first Spanish group to do so. That's actually really cool. Releasing a record called Disney Mania. In 1996, they participated in the Benidorm International Song Festival, but don't get too excited. This isn't the same Benidorm that's used to select a Spanish Eurovision entry today. Well, it is, but it isn't. It's a form of the same show that's changed over the years. It's kind of complicated. Benidorm honestly deserves its own episode, as it's similar in style to San Remo, which is the precursor to Eurovision. In the 1996 festival, they won third place. They participated in Benidorm 2001, winning second place, and in that same year, they attempted to return to Eurovision, participating in the Spanish selection show Eurocanción 2001 with the song A Nadie Como A Ti, under the name High Priority. Here is a clip from the selection show. This song is a much better entry compared to 1988, but considering none of the original performers from 1988 were on stage or in the band at this point, and the only original member from the time was Javier de Juan, who directed the band, this isn't really the same group, but it raises a Ship of Theseus style of philosophical question. This is the debate that argues whether an object is the same object after all the original components have been replaced over time. In this case, the question is the La Decada band from 2001 the same as the one in 1988, with all of the performing members being replaced? For our purposes, so long as at least one member of the band from 1988 remains in the group, it is the same band. And since Javier is still part of the band at this time serving as director, this is still La Decada, and I'm ignoring the name change. There is actual coordination in this entry, hooray! And the song is quite a bop. In fact, this came really close to going to Eurovision, as they came second, losing to David Civera, and thank goodness they lost, because David's entry was a billion times better than this. Don't get me wrong, it was not a bad entry, it's just not Spanish perfection like David's song was. Moving forward, the Spanish Wikipedia page talks about the group attempting to enter Eurovision in 2005, but it feels a bit weird. Translated into English, it reads the following. In 2005, Garden, a group made up of four ex-components of La Decada since 2002, appeared to represent Spain in Eurovision under the name Yaster with the song How to Forget. The group would dissolve that same year. Now, I'm applying the Theseus rule of at least one original member needing to remain, and since Javier de Juan was not part of this group, I'm not counting this as part of La Decada's official history. The Spanish Wikipedia article also references additional attempts at returning to Eurovision in 2007 and 8, but the information is scarce and I can't find anything to back up these claims, so I'm moving forward to 2018, when Javier de Juan leaves the band, and the last remaining connection to the band in 1988 is severed, ending their existence as a Eurovision entrant. The band still carries the name to this day, and in 2024 they are planning tours in Spain and America, so they remain active as of the recording of this episode. As for the members from 1988, they've all gone forward with their own careers, with Javier being the last holdout for 30 years after their entry in the Eurovision Song Contest. And that is the story of La Decada at the Eurovision Song Contest. The band has a complicated history of constant change, and honestly, they didn't feel right for Eurovision. While they may be good at covering music, their originally written song for Eurovision was very middle of the road and lacked any coordination and cohesion. I hope that the remaining members find happiness in their own pursuits. As I mentioned in the previous episode, I'm putting a pause on the Eurovision report as most of the news is related to song releases and national finals, and there's way too much for me to keep up with. So instead, I'm moving straight on to Song of the Week. This is part of the show where I talk about a Eurovision entry that I enjoy, or maybe it's forgettable, terrible, or iconic. Let's find out which Eurovision entry is this week's Song of the Week. This week's song of the week is the Italian entry from 1980, Non so che darai, I don't know what to give, sung by Alan Sorrenti, composer and lyricist Alan Sorrenti, conductor Del Newman. It placed 6th with 87 points. It got 12 points from Portugal, 10 points from Sweden, Spain, and Belgium, 8 points from Switzerland, and points from 13 other countries. There is a lot going on in this entry, and I have no idea where to begin, whether it's the fashion, the singing, or the hair. I'll start with the fashion. It's the beginning of the 1980s, and shoulder pads come bursting through the fashion scene. Ignoring Alan's shoulder pads, they pale in comparison to the two backing dancers slash singer slash guitar playing ladies that look like they are wearing football shoulder pads underneath their business wear. I say business wear, the lady in pink looks like she works in an office, and the woman in the blue jumpsuit looks just absolutely stunning. She gets a douze point for fashion. As for Alan, his outfit is stereotypically 1980s, but the thing I can't get over is his hair. Specifically the flow of hair from his head and the really pronounced facial hair. His hair and facial hair reminds me of the quote-unquote flow style of hair that a lot of sports players had in the 2010s. When I was in high school, I remember a lot of the guys obsessing over growing out their hair, and they look a lot like Alan's hair in this entry. And yeah, I've been talking about fashion and hair. I haven't even gotten to the song, which is decent, but I don't like the key that he sings in. I don't enjoy his falsetto, and overall, the pinks and blues don't help in expressing the song. The song's lyrics is just depression piled onto more depression, losing the one you love, blah, blah, blah. Look, this entry gets Song of the Week purely for the fashion paradox that is the 1980s. I'm not even paying attention to the song at this point. At least Italy gave Morocco points that year, so I won't bash the song any further, but I give Song of the Week to Alan and his backing shoulder pads. It is fascinating to look at the band at Eurovision compared to a single artist. At some point, if the band's original members are no longer there, but the band in name remains, where do you draw the line in Eurovision participation? I drew that line today, but perhaps you draw that line somewhere else. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, there are loads of ways to do so. You can reach out to us on Instagram at ESC101podcast, or you can send us an email, ESC101podcast@gmail.com. For those of you who are on Spotify, be sure to check out our Spotify poll questions. Be sure to follow the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on so you don't miss out on any future episodes, and leave us a review so other Eurovision history fans can find us. Be sure to check out the show notes so you can check out the sources that we used in today's episode on our website, esc101podcast.wordpress.com. Next week, we are going to be exploring one of the venues which hosted the Eurovision Song Contest, so stay tuned to discover where we're going next. You have been listening to ESC 101. See you next time.